I'm certain it happens all the time, yeah.
What do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but it sure feels like
hey, what's up, everybody? Whoa, this seat is really high up. Oh my god. Hey, how's everybody doing? This is DJ Desert Rose, and you are now listening to Drawing the Line. Tune in to me Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on just about the greatest radio station ever, radio.dominican.edu. I give advice on things like relationships, friendships, careers, family, and school. However, I do not and will never, ever, ever, ever give any legal or medical advice. So if you have a legal issue, please contact a lawyer. Or if you have a medical issue or medical emergency, please visit your local hospital or dial 911. And so, this is another one of those parent-child relationship moments that I have with you guys. You know, some parents just choose to stop. Ow. Some parents just choose to stop at one, and some want, you know, at least two, no more than four. In any case, sibling rivalry is bound to happen, and that's what I'm going to talk to you guys about today. So, but, like, what is the best way for parents to handle fights between their children? The best way? By not getting involved in it at all. Kids do need to learn how to handle squabbles on their own, and when a parent interferes, it can look like the parent is taking sides. However, does that mean that the parent should not be involved in certain situations? No. According to the book Get Out of My Life, But First Could You Drive Me and Cheryl to the Mall by Anthony E. Wolfe, PhD, and I actually have a copy of this book. I don't even know, like, why I have a copy of this book. I didn't even buy it. I didn't even see any reason to buy it because, you know, I don't have children, but I think my mom got it. I'm not sure why she got it. She probably got it when I was a teenager, but to tell the truth, I wasn't even that bad as a teenager. I don't have any siblings, but anyway. But, you know, it's coming in handy now, so I guess it's not so bad. So in Wolf's book, in a section titled Intrafamilial Hassles, with the subtitle of Sibling Rivalry, Wolf starts off by creating a scene that could very well happened between siblings. Mind you, these two siblings in his book are two teenage girls, and when teenage siblings go at it, it can understandably drive mom and dad absolutely bonkers. The two girls in this scene both confront their mother, talking about how the other one is completely crazy, and if that something isn't done, they're going to kill each other. Mom's response? The typical, and this is a quote from the book, it was the typical, "No, you're both wrong. I am going to kill the both of you." Now, and I'm pretty sure there are moments, every parent has that moment in their life where they just want to kill their kids. Like, that doesn't mean you're actually going to do it, but I'm pretty sure every parent has felt that every once in a while. And because teenagers are bigger and stronger than what they were when they were small children, sibling rivalry can get very violent, and they can and do injure each other. However, it is a parent's job to make sure that this rivalry between siblings does not go that far. If there is a bit of name-calling and yelling at each other, or pretty much harmless roughhousing, then there's no real need to worry. However, if you see both of your children trying to cause actual injury to each other, then that is when a parent should intervene. According to Wolf, the message should be, "You may not do anything that could cause injury to your sister, and I will do everything to make sure that that does not happen." as I said before, kids do need to learn how to handle disputes on their own, as it is a part of life and growing up. I mean, let's just say you constantly interfere with your kids' disputes and you constantly solve their problems for them. That means that eventually the more you do that, the more your kid is going to rely on you to solve your problems for them. And they can't do that because, like I said, let's just say you keep solving their problems for them, you keep interfering, your kid is never really going to learn how to solve a dispute on their own. So how are they going to handle it when they actually get out into, you know, the real world and have an actual dispute? They're not going to know what to do. Now, like I said, kids do need to learn how to handle disputes on their own, as it is a part of life and growing up. However, if serious injury is being caused to one another, then yes, a parent should intervene. But what exactly is the problem with parents intervening all the time? Also, according to Wolf, when a parent intervenes, then the battle between siblings takes on a totally different level. It becomes a battle for parental support and favor. When this happens, the two siblings no longer care about actually resolving the problem, but instead now getting a parent or both parents on their side. Other than that, parents should just let their kids work it out on their own. If one of your kids comes to you complaining about their sibling, the best thing to do is tell them that you don't want to hear about it and that they're perfectly capable of handling it on their own and walk away. And actually, come to think of it, my mom, she was the youngest of four siblings. And I'm pretty sure those of you who have kids and maybe even those of you who don't have kids can probably get an idea of how hectic that was. And according to my mom, she had a lot of fights with her siblings, like a ton of them. And, you know, she would often tell her siblings, the ones who would pick on her, and she'd be like, I'm going to tell mama and daddy that you're teasing me. But she eventually learned that, you know, this was just an empty threat, because every time she went to her mom and dad, you know, my grandparents, they'd pretty much do the same thing that I just mentioned. They'd be like, hey, we don't want to hear about it. You have a fight with your brother and sisters. You guys work it out. We're not interested. Like, do it on your own, kids. But, however, there are different ways to handle sibling rivalry. When it comes to, you know, younger children, there are tactics that parents can use to stop sibling rivalry before it happens. According to proactiveparenting.net, there are 6 ways to stop sibling rivalry. So, without further ado, here are those lovely 6 tips. Number 1, don't be a judge and jury. Most parents think that their job is to be a judge and jury, where, like a jury, they hear both of their children's side, and like a judge, pass judgment, come to a decision, or what have you. By doing this, however, kids don't learn to resolve things for themselves. When a parent decides who is right and who is wrong, this doesn't make the issue go away, it just creates an even bigger one. Instead, one child feels like a total winner and the other kid is still angry. The whole point is to make both kids be at peace with each other. Or if you can't do that, you know, just separate the little brats. Like, the whole point, it's not to make one kid feel like the winner and another kid feel like the loser. That's not what you're supposed to do. Number 2. Instead of being a judge and jury, be a facilitator. Instead of taking sides, try to get your kids to talk about how the fight started in the first place and why they are feeling the way they feel now. Number 3. Explain to your children that we do not hurt the ones we love, but that there's nothing wrong with being angry. Anger is not a negative thing. It's actually very healthy. It is important that children do get their anger out, provided that they are not hurting themselves or anybody else. Let your children know that one way to hurt somebody is by accident, and the other way is to use physical force. Although accidents can and do happen, physical force should never, ever be allowed. Number 4. Do not compare your kids. Oh my God, people have done this to me and I absolutely hated it. It's so annoying. If there's one thing that children hate, and I'm not even kidding you, if there is one thing that children hate, it's being compared to one another. Remember, your kids, yeah, while they're blood related, they're two totally different people and as such deserve and want their own identities. Parents saying to one children, why can't you be more like your sister? Or why can't you be more like your brother? Only creates negativity. The child that is being talked down to begins to feel that their sibling is better than they are, and that mom and dad love that sibling more. And this causes some siblings to actually increase the fighting. Remember, the whole point is to decrease sibling rivalry, not increase it. Numero 5. Recognize and focus on each child's special talents and unique abilities. This means help your child build up self-esteem, as well as teach them tactics to use when handling arguments. And number 6, keep educating yourself on how to deal with this. Remember, all parents learn as they raise their children, and there's nothing wrong with getting a little outside help. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I've never been a parent before, like, at all. Like, I'm not a parent right now. Like, I don't have kids. But I have a feeling that even couples who are, like, married and, like, old, who are, like, older than me and married and have careers and done all that college stuff, I'm pretty sure even though they were ready for a baby, I'm pretty sure they weren't, like, ready for a baby. Like, you know, they didn't go into it knowing everything and knowing exactly how to handle things and knowing what to do when something got, you know, a little screwed up. Nobody goes into parenting knowing just about everything. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting a little help. And like I said before, there's nothing wrong with getting a little outside help. So, another article I came across was called How to Stop Sibling Rivalry, and it is from RD.com, which stands for Reader's Digest. If you have two or more children, these words are bound to come up, and trust me, they are. Mine, he started it, it's not fair, I don't wanna, you can't make me, leave my stuff alone, and the list goes on. Sometimes brothers and sisters will fight over the smallest of things, such as who gets to play with the Buzz Lightyear toy from Lightyear model from Toy Story first, causing mom and dad to make a break for that large bottle of aspirin. So, what are some other tips to stop sibling rivalry before you go completely bonkers? One way is to actually see what is going on. Often a time, a parent will fall into a scream fest and yell at either one or both of their kids. If you're snapping at one kid for hitting their sibling, maybe they only did so because they were constantly being provoked, and that provocative sibling didn't stop no matter how many times they were asked to. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm in no way saying that the parent should endorse one child hitting another. In my opinion, a parent endorsing, like, actually encouraging one child to beat up on the other, I personally think that's, you know, kind of messed up. If you were paying attention earlier, actual physical damage from one sibling to another should never, ever be allowed, or heck, even encouraged for that matter. What I'm saying is that when it is a good idea for, what it is, what I'm saying is that it's a good idea for parents to listen to both children. Now, yes, I did say that parents should not get involved. However, there are a million ways that parents can prevent sibling rivalry, and I'm just introducing you guys to some of the different methods. You know, each parent has their own method of dealing with this kind of thing. Also, guiding children when it comes to stuff like this when they are younger can help when they get to be teenagers. Ow. When a parent sees the bigger picture and listens to both kids, that parent will have a better time helping out. Let's go back to the two siblings mentioned earlier. Say they are brother and sister. The sister whacked her brother across the face because he kept doing the things that normal brothers do with sisters, such as poke them, push them, pull their hair, that kind of stuff. But before she actually clocked him, the sister told her brother several times to stop, but he wouldn't. So finally, she got tired of it and socked him in the mouth. Naturally, the brother runs crying to mom and dad, most likely with the words, "Oh my God, she hit me!" Now, here is how a parent should handle the situation. Number one, separate both children. Have one sit in one chair and the other sibling in another. Number two, ask each sibling to tell what happened, but let them know that they have to do this one at a time. You're not, tell them that you're not going to listen to two kids just screaming. Number three, in this case, when all is said and done, this should be the message that a parent sends to each sibling. To the sister, I understand why you got frustrated with her, with your brother, to the sister, I understand why you got frustrated with your brother, and if I were in your situation, I probably would have felt the same way you did. But that is still no reason to hit people. Next time, why don't you come talk to me about it when he won't stop when you ask him to? And to the brother, I understand that you are only having fun, but you also need to remember to respect other people's wishes. Stop means stop, and I'm very sure your sister would appreciate it if you would listen to her next time. I would appreciate it as well. The whole point is to not take sides, though. Another tip is to acknowledge that your children do have feelings. Even if the kids are complaining about or fighting over or getting mad over nothing, they are still children, still human, and still have emotions. Another tip, model good behavior. Kids learn by example, so if they see mom and dad handling an argument, they may think that's the way to do it. But if mom and dad aren't handling an argument in a mature, respectful way, don't drill the philosophy of do as I say, not as I do into your kids. And a lot of parents actually do this. The more a parent shows positive influence, the more that children will pick up on that positivity and learn to handle problems with siblings with positivity as well. Now, you know, I don't have any brothers or sisters, but actually, no, come to think of it, for all I know, I could, because I'm adopted. I have no idea who my biological parents are. So for all I know, I could have some siblings somewhere out in the world, but I'm not going to get into that. But right now, you know, as far as I know, most likely 99.9% accuracy, I don't have siblings. I'm an only child. However, I do have a few very, very close friends. I mean, we're really close, who are just like sisters to me, and as such, we fight in the same ways that sisters do. And the parents of these sisters almost never got into the middle of our fights unless it got really bad. We never actually physically fought, but sometimes the yelling at each other would get so bad and so loud that we would have to be separated. I would say tied up in duct tape, because that's something you'd probably see in a cartoon, but nope, never happened. Although I wouldn't be surprised if those parents actually thought about it. So yeah, all parents remember, siblings do fight, and some worse than others. However, that does not mean that you have to listen to it, accept it, and like I said before, never ever encourage it. We are going to take a quick break. This is DJ Desert Rose, and you are listening to Drawing the Line, only on radio.dominican.edu.
Forum. was younger, I believed the dreams came true. Now I wonder, 'cause I've seen much more dark skies than a blue. Now I wonder, I keep on praying for a blue sky. I keep on searching through the rain. I keep on thinking of the good times. Will they ever come again? Now I wonder. Now I wonder.
Swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the times they are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes.
We are back. Next up is to how to handle it. Ow! That really hurt. Okay, next up is to how to handle it when your child has been found to be cheating in school. And a lot of you are probably wondering, hey, why'd you put this Desert Rose? This is really interesting. The reason why I put this is because of the fact that, I've seen situations, like, I've seen kids, get caught cheating in school, and I always wondered, gee, what's going to happen when mom and dad gets wind of this? Like, I wonder how mad they going to be. And also, I put this one in here because this is an issue that many parents face. And I found an interesting article on this from education.com titled, Why Kids Cheat and How to Stop It. There are many reasons that kids cheat in school, and they are, and some of them are stress. They're focused more on getting good grades than rather than understanding the material, and pressure. It's not necessarily that the kid has a desire to cheat or they want to cheat. They just believe that it's the easy way out. And, you know, it is. Cheating is the way, is the easy way out, but the price one has to pay when they're caught is very expensive. So, how should a parent stop their kid from cheating once and for all? Let's face it, no, and I absolutely mean no parent wants to get that phone call saying that their kid is in big trouble because they cheated on a test. So, I don't know, why not try and prevent your kids from cheating in the first place? One way being to not put pressure on them in the first place. Parents who put too much pressure on their child may drive that kid to cheat because they fear if they aren't the best in everything, then mom and dad will not love them anymore. Parents need to let their kids know that this will never, ever happen. You love your child for who they are, not if they are the best in everything. Let your kids know that you want them to do their best, not be the best. Let your kids know, like, look, all we want you to do is just, like, let's just say your kid has an exam coming up. Just tell them, look, all we want you to do is try your best. And if you don't get a good grade, it's totally okay. We're not going to get mad at you. You know, we'll know that you did your best. We'll know you tried. If you get a failing grade, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Another tip, talk to your kids about their school life. If the kid says that they are stressed out, ask them why they're stressed out. Don't say, well, what do you have to be stressed about? And then start comparing your stresses to theirs. And honestly, that's another thing that I don't like is when, you know, I see people talking about, oh, you know, I'm really stressed out about this, this, and this, and then the person that they're talking to starts comparing their stress level to the other person. They're just like, oh, well, you know, I don't see what you have to be stressed about. I have to do this, this, and this. Whether it's a lot or a little, stress is still stress. And everybody has it. Instead, ask them to talk about it. You know, try something like, well, why don't you tell me what you're stressed about? And maybe I can help you reduce that stress. Another way to do this is to talk to your child about peer pressure. There may be times when other classmates will ask your child if they can copy your kid's homework, or what's the answer to number 17 on that math exam. And the thing is, though, I mean, cheating is pretty bad, but cheating is pretty bad, but actually allowing someone to cheat off you is also bad. Telling your kids that saying no, while hard, is the right thing to do. But how should a parent handle it when their kids cheat? There are many, many ways to handle this, but I personally would like to give my own two cents about this. Don't get mad or yell at the kid, but don't act like you're okay with what they did. Cheating is never okay, no matter what the circumstances are. When you bring your child home, sit them down. Do not berate them or belittle them, because as I've said many, 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 many times before, this just creates bigger conflicts and never solves the problem other than create fear and resentment. Instead, ask your child in a calm voice, why do you think it was a good idea to cheat? And when your child answers, tell them that you understand where they're coming from, because, hey, you were in school once and that you realize school can be very stressful. But also let them know that while you understand where they are coming from, let them know that there is still no excuse for cheating, and decide on a consequence such as, because you cheated on that test, no TV for, you know, a certain amount of days. But be sure to follow through on that. When being a parent, you should also be consistent. Another article I found, was called Why More Young Kids Cheat, and it is from online.wsj.com. What happens when a kid cheats, even when their parents have already told them not to, because it's wrong? shaping the child's IELTS, and I quote, moral compass, can be one of the difficult challenges that parents face. The idea is to help kids associate cheating with other things that are bad, such as stealing and lying. According to the article, and I quote again, most children understand as early as ages 2.5 to 4 that it is wrong to hit, shove, or tease another child, says a 2012 study in the journal Child Development. And preschoolers typically know it is wrong to cheat at games. But translating that understanding from a game situation to an academic situation is a huge leap, says Eric Anderman, professor of educational psychology at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Well, where else would it be? When students begin standardized testing, that is when huge amounts of pressure start. Many schools give grades, in other words, A, B, C, D, or F, and many children do feel the need to keep those grades nice and high. Another quote, here to get an idea for this, another quote, children with poor study skills or learning disabilities are especially vulnerable. Poor impulse control is linked with higher readiness to cheat, says a 2010 study of 189 children in the Journal of Clinical Child and Adolescent Psychology. By the time kids get into middle and high school, the pressure to cheat is caused by peers. At this age, the opinion of their peers means everything to a kid. If somebody asks you for the answers and you say no, it can be like signing your own death warrant, destroying your rung in the social ladder, binding your fate as a loser forever. Okay, so dramatic, yes, but that's how a kid feels. Also, according to the article, a parent can help their child by giving them a way out, such as, oh, well, you know, I'd love to share the answers with you. You know, I really, really would, but my mom will murder me if I do. Hey, you never know. It might work. And, my mom was a teacher, but I don't think, I'm sure she's had to deal with, you know, students cheating, but she's never had to deal with me cheating ever because I've never done it. So, actually, I asked my mom what she would do if she was the parent of a child who cheated. And, you know, the response she gave really made quite sense, actually. She says that while she would listen to the teacher, she would also listen to her kid and ask the kid what happened. Then she would ask, why do you think it was a good idea to cheat? Or another question she would ask would have been, what made you cheat, as in, what was your motivation to do so? She also said that she would hear the kid out and try to figure out their reasons for cheating. I mean, she said that she wouldn't have been like absolutely furious and start yelling and screaming and shouting, but she definitely would have let the kid know that she was very disappointed in them. And also, when I asked my mom about consequences, she said that she would let the kid know that they have done something that was, quote, morally wrong. My mom is also a believer in getting the kid involved with what kind of consequence should be issued. She did this with me as a kid, and like I said, no, not in the sense of cheating, because, quite honestly, I've never cheated on something, and it worked. To her, involving the kid is a more effective approach. Every parent has their own method of handling the situation. What every parent should do, however, is find out why it happened in the first place and work on methods from preventing it from happening again. Now that I think about it, it might be interesting to learn about the consequences of cheating, because they vary depending on what level of school you are at. Cheating has consequences that are either short-lived or, well, long-term. When you cheat in middle school or elementary school, that's grounds for an automatic F on the assignment or the exam that you cheated on. In high school, you risk automatically failing the class, or, you know, just getting an F on that assignment or an exam. And when you get to the college level, that Ladies and gentlemen, that is where cheating is taken very seriously. In the college level, there is absolutely no tolerance for cheating. The consequences can be anywhere from automatically failing the class that you cheated in or being expelled from that college. So basically, I also asked my mom about what happens when a student is found cheating at a college, like a state college or university, and my mom told me that, according to her, if a student is caught cheating, then he will have to go up against the board of something or other. I forgot what it was. I think it was the board of educators and try to plead a case. But ultimately, pretty much, that student risks being expelled from that college. Long explanation short, it is not worth it. It may seem like it's worth it while you are cheating, and you may not think you won't get caught, but trust me, you will. But I'm not here to tell you that you shouldn't cheat mainly because you'll get caught. That's sending the wrong message. It's always better to do your own work rather than hitch a free ride on somebody else's. And yes, plagiarism does count as cheating as well. Plagiarism is where you copy somebody else's work and pass it off as your own without giving proper credit. And I remember watching when I was a sophomore in high school, my English teacher had my entire class watch a video on plagiarism, and they covered exactly what plagiarism is, why it happens, and how it happens. They also mentioned something very interesting, and it makes sense. After I explain it to you, it's going to make sense. But in the video, it also said that, say you have an exam due, and you pay someone to write the exam for you. That is still plagiarism because in the end, it's not really your true and honest work. Copying somebody's work and passing off as your own without any intentions to give them credit is pretty bad, but paying somebody to write a report for you is also pretty bad. Many students have plagiarized at some point in their lives. So if any of you out there are thinking of doing that because, you waited until the last day before that essay was due, can I just say two things? One, it's your own fault for waiting that long. And two, before you decide to actually do this, try to put yourself in the position of the person you're about to plagiarize off of. How would you feel if somebody passed off your work as theirs and didn't even bother to give you proper credit? Yeah, you wouldn't be too happy, no, would you? And once again, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive into relationships. I feel like I've been rather ignoring that category, and it's going to be interesting. This is DJ Desert Rose, and you are drawing the line. And you are listening to Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m., only on radio.dominican.edu.
You better lay your body. Lay it down. Hey.
we are back with more Drawing the Line. As I said before, I'm now going to talk to you guys about codependent relationships. My boyfriend is learning about them in one of his classes, and I thought it would make for an interesting topic for my show. Heck, I loved it so much. Oh my god, heck, I loved it so much that I just had to put it in here. I mean, come on, it's gold. Thank you very much, dear boyfriend of mine. I would kiss you, but that is, like, so totally, like, physically impossible. Okay, first of all, what is a codependent relationship? According to WebMD and marriage and family therapist Tina Tessina, a codependent relationship, by definition, means making the relationship more important to you than you are to yourself. Tessina says, it's kind of a weird phrase, and it doesn't sound like it means a one-sided relationship, but that's what it is. It means you're trying to make the relationship work with someone else who's not. Codependency can also arise when a partner's self-absorbed or uninterested. Tessina also says, this may happen in a relationship where only one of you is ever asking to get together or making moves towards the other one. Also, according to WebMD, it is really good to ask yourself these questions regarding a codependent relationship. Question number one, is this relationship more important to me than I am? Tessina does say that love has a selfless element in which you want to make the other person happy. However, it's one thing to give a lot to your significant other. It's another when you're completely destroying yourself in the process and doing nothing for yourself. Contrary to popular belief, there is nothing wrong with being selfish. Remember, you have to take care of yourself before you take care of other people, and you cannot rely on other people to make you happy. Only you can find true happiness within yourself. Question number two, what price am I paying for being with this person? If you're constantly putting yourself last, not thinking of your wants and needs, this is not healthy. And question number three, am I the only one putting energy into this relationship? For instance, if your partner is too uninterested or distracted from putting in as much as you do, then the relationship is not going to be as much fun. Another article I came across was called Codependent Relationships, How to Know If You're in One and How to Break the Pattern, and it is from eHarmony.com. Many people do not or may not realize that they are in a codependent relationship, so it's a good idea to pay attention to the signs. The article starts off with a very interesting opening, and I just have to quote it. If asked to picture a codependent couple, you might imagine a hunky-dory pair who does everything exactly the same, talking, walking, and dressing. The truth about codependent couples, however, is quite different. Though there are many different versions of codependence, they all share the same underlying problem. They try to control their partner. They aren't comfortable on their own. In fact, the term codependent came about to describe an addict and their caretaker. Person A, the drinker, drinks too much and gets themselves into conflicts, such as making promises that they can or cannot, or have no intention of keeping, and missing important deadlines, are not showing up to work or other important meetings, and person B, the caretaker, is expected to solve and fix all the damage, even the emotional ones. The article also gives an example of a codependent relationship with two people, Alec and his fiancée Mandy. Alec wanted to go out every once in a while to a bar or a restaurant with his fiancée Mandy. Mandy was not a fan of the nightlife, nor did she like bars very much, and stated that she would much rather cook dinner for him at home. The result? The couple never went out, and this caused Alec to resent Mandy, and he rarely ever went out with his buddies for fear of her being bored if he left her at home alone. Doesn't sound like a very healthy situation now, does it? Alec got so frustrated that Mandy ended up having to set up sessions for couples therapy because the relationship was no longer harmonious and they weren't getting along anymore. In order for Alec and Mandy's relationship to work, they had to realize and accept that each of them had different styles of socializing and possibly coming up with a solution, maybe by offering that every few days they go out and every few days they stay at home, it wouldn't be a bad idea. They also had to realize and accept that the other person had to socialize separately every once in a while. although you are in a relationship, you need to have time for yourself and time to spend with your friends as well. Now, keep in mind that if you're willing to do so and if you're very determined, the codependent pattern can be broken, but it will only be broken and it will only work if you want it to work. Now, in order to want something, you have to really want it. You have to work at it. Otherwise, it's never going to happen. And unfortunately, I'm so sad, I'm about to cry. Not really. And unfortunately, we are running out of time. But we will pick up on this next time. You never know. We might. Actually, no, I'm kidding. We will. I'm trying to sound mysterious and the one's not working. So yeah, we will pick up on this next time. Join me, Desert Rose, for another episode of Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. Oh wait, just kidding, we're not running out of time. Oh god, I mixed the numbers up on the clock. So let's go back to that a bit, shall we? Sorry, ADD moment. This is an ADD moment. Do any of you remember when I was doing an episode on ADD, and I think it was my last show? Yeah, I was having one of those. Do you see what I mean? It's annoying. So, back to the matter at hand. So, first off, from where I left off, if you want to make it work, first off, sit down with your partner and let them know that you are planning on breaking this unhealthy pattern and that you plan on doing so as soon as possible. Let them know that you have been studying codependent relationships and that you have learned that codependent people tend to swallow their true feelings, which causes strong resentment. Share some of your resentments with your partner and offer your partner to do the same. Next up, spend more time alone. This is the number one way to reduce and put a stop to once and for all your codependent relationship. You may feel the urge to call or text your partner, but try to avoid this. Another way is to focus your attention on something else and to be productive. Do anything. Try a new workout, read a book, join a volunteer center, get a job, pay your bills, walk the dog, feed the cat, start a new hobby, clean the toilet, anything! Sorry. So here's some hints for a sign of a codependent relationship based on another article that I found called End a Codependent Relationship, The Healthy Way from mindfulconstruct.com. It gives 12 hints, but instead of giving you all 12 hints, I'm going to give you the ones that stand out the most in my opinion. Hint number one. You feel like you cannot live without the other person, meaning if they left you, you know for certain that you just would not be able to go on with your life. That the world is coming to an end. Oh, the horror! Hint number two. You have convinced yourself that you need the other person to be happy because they represent true happiness. If you do not have them in your life, then you cannot truly be happy. Hint number three. You tolerate misuse, abuse, and being taken advantage of because you love them. Hint number four. You feel like it is your job to save the other person, that it is your job to solve their problems and pick up after the messes that they make. But your partner doesn't want to be saved, or they act like they care, but instead they continue to destroy all of your efforts. Hint number five. You keep telling yourself that if you keep at it and hang on long enough, your partner will ultimately take your advice or see the light. You have convinced yourself that when this happens, it will be so worth it in the end, but the path to getting there is a living nightmare. And finally, hint number six. You continually dream and imagine about what your life would be like without that person. Now, what does it take to end a codependent relationship? As mentioned before, determination. Like with all things, you have to really want it. But just wanting it is not enough. You have to really work at it as well. You'll need to put into a position where you are so angry that you finally realize the unhealthy situation that you are in. And connecting your anger to that is an important thing to do. Like I said before, anger is a healthy thing. This anger gives you the power to reclaim who you truly are when you have spent so much time giving yourself away. Codependency means that you need to be connected to a dysfunctional person, but the anger that you are feeling, or anger in general, is nature's way of telling humans when they've been pushed too far and when enough is enough. Also, codependency is all about boundaries. If there are personal boundaries that are not stable, healthy, or just plain don't exist, it's a codependent relationship. When these boundaries are healthy, stable, and strong, it is an independent relationship. Now, here is not how to end a codependent relationship. 1. Blaming it on all the other person before distancing yourself. 2. Cutting the other person out of your life before you even told them how you felt that you were wronged by them. Even if they don't accept it, remember, you cannot force them to accept it. But at least telling them how you truly feel will help you in the long run, and you will get so much baggage off of your shoulders. Other ways to not end a codependent relationship. Purposely hurting them in the process of you getting away. In the end, there is nothing healthy about revenge, not being totally direct with them as to why you're ending it, or having somebody end it for you. And I'd say the last one is a coward's way out. And although I do know that I am in no position to judge, as I have never been in a codependent relationship myself, but isn't it better to do your own work, finish your own tasks, rather than expect someone else to do it for you? If you expect someone else to end the codependent relationship for you, you'll never find true closure. If you're going to end the codependent relationship with somebody else, then, and I'm sorry for saying this, I really am, but why end a codependent relationship in the first place if you have no intention of doing it yourself? I will, however, offer sympathy in that this must be a nerve-wracking and scary situation, but you have to face your fears in life. Otherwise, you'll never be able to truly move on. And for real this time, we are running out of time, but we will pick up on this next time. Join me, Desert Rose, for another episode of Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. Only on radio.dominican.edu, and I'm actually really excited. Talk to you guys next time.
For your fractured heart and its wounded deep down, I don't wanna be a substitute for the smoke you've been inhaling. Well,